Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the mark Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Samach Beis. You'll notice a Mishnah. You can count 25 lines from the top if you're really into counting. The Mishnah, Hamakadish Eso Isha V'Omar, man proposes marriage to a woman and she accepts, and he says, "Kasavur hoyisishi kohenis varehi levia." I thought that she was from a Kohen family, and it turns out that she is from a Levi family. Alternatively, levia varehi kohenis. I thought she was from a Levi family, and it turns out that in reality she is from a Kohen family. Ani ovihashira. I thought that she was an impoverished woman, and it turns out that she is wealthy. Ashira v'harehi ania, or the other way around. Harei zu mekudeshes b'nei shelo hitaso. The marriage is binding because she did not trick him. In other words, all of his, let's say, misconceptions are internal. There was nothing that she did to lead him astray, to trick him. Rashi points out that all of these mistakes are, as we said, internal. They're called dvorim shebelev. And as such, einam dvorim, they don't have any legal consequence. They were all merely in his mind. Here we have a new section of the Mishnah. The slash mark indicates a new train of thought. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, which says, Dugmois, examples, Shel Kiddushin, of marriage, Hamevusasin Advorim Shelo Baliolum, that are based on matters, situations that haven't yet come to be. Lo Baliolum, they haven't come into the world. So let's see these examples. Be married unto me after I convert. Right now I am a Gentile, and hence the laws of marriage are irrelevant because I am a Gentile and you are Jewish. But I'm proposing marriage to you, and I'm giving you money in anticipation of the marriage taking hold after I convert. Or the other way around. He's Jewish and she is non-Jewish. The only chance of a marriage taking hold would be if she converts. So he proposes marriage to her and says, let this be our marriage after you convert. So he offers her money to that effect. Lachar she'eshtachrer, or lachar she'tishtachri. The term shichrur eshtachrer has to do with a person who is currently a slave. He's a Eved Kenani, and only once he achieves freedom would he become Jewish. So he says, thusly, I'm marrying you in anticipation of my becoming free, or your becoming free, if she's a heathen bondmaid. Lachar shiyomuz balech, or he's talking to a married woman, and he says, I want to marry you after your husband dies. O lachar shetomus achosech. Right now, I am married to your sister, so I can't marry you. So the man says, I'm proposing marriage to you to take hold after your sister, i.e. my wife, dies. Lachar shiachlotz lech yivmech. Or a man talks to a woman who's currently in the yibum bond. She's bound to marry her deceased husband's brother, and she can't marry another man until the surviving brother does chalitza, the shoe removal ceremony, with her. So this outsider proposes marriage to her, saying, I am going to I will be married to you after your the Yavam does the shoe removal ceremony. Well, in all of these cases, Eino Mekudeshes, the marriage does not take hold. Nothing takes hold at this point because right now they are not capable of establishing a marital bond. Man says to his friend, if your wife gives birth to a girl, a nekeva, female, I want her to be married unto me. It's ineffective. There's a continuation that you can see in the text that's in parentheses, but the Gemara points out that it can't be part of the Mishnah because that which is in parentheses really figures as part of the Gemara later on. So we are not going to read it now and wait for it to appear as part of the Gemara. We look at the side of the Gemara, of our marked Gemaras. You can see we have a Nosei / Mivneh. And it reads as follows. Psak shel Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to see Rabbi Yochanan's ruling, Be'inyin ha'tori min ha'tolush ala mechubar l'chi she'yit l'shu. Toreim has to do with tithing, the truma tithe, or it could be tithing in general. And he separates produce that's loose, that's detached, and declares it to be the tithe for that which is still attached, still growing, still attached to the ground, but declares when that which is still attached becomes detached. So he adds a key phrase, lichishiyit l'shu. We should back up just for a moment and say that one who tries to tithe from that which is tolush, detached, in order to exempt that which is currently growing, that's an ineffective tithe. That which is detached is obligated to be tithed. That which is attached is not yet obligated in tithing. So that's called minachiyuv ala poter, and by the way, and vice versa. That's an ineffective tithing. However, here we're adding the one critical factor and saying that his declaration, though he's trying to exempt a produce that's currently growing, he says that the exemption shall set in only once it becomes detached. So as you look at things right now, without any statements, just the ability to tithe from detached to exempt something still growing, that's meaningless. It's an ineffective tithe. What about a case like this? So Rabbi Yochanan says, "The chol shebiyado." We continue reading the note on the side. The chol shebiyado lav kemechuser ma'isa. That which, though, hasn't happened yet, but it's in his power to do thusly. For example, the produce that's growing, he can detach it right now. It's within his control. It's within his power to detach it. So even though you're dealing with something that hasn't come to be yet, but it could come to be through the person's own efforts, it's considered as if it's done. So Rabbi Yochanan says that a tithe like that is effective. If you're declaring that which is detached to be the tithe for something currently attached, but you add when it becomes detached, so the stuff that is growing, when you detach it, will have been exempted by the tithe that you're separating right now. That we'll see in the Gemara after as Rabbi Yochanan issues his ruling. Following that, though, diamonds will appear, and we have an hour note on the side that says Lior Diver Yochanan, in light of Rabbi Yochanan, Ha Gemara Mevia Mispar Kushyos Hashelus Legabi Kiddushin. A number of questions will be presented in the realm of marriage that are going to, let's say, present problems in light of that which Rabbi Yochanan ruled. Now the Gemara. Tanan Hossam. The Tanaic source says over there in Maseches Trumos, one of the tractates that is found in Seder Zroim, there's no Gemara on the tractates of Seder Zroim except for Maseches Brochas, and it says there in the Mishnah, Ein Tormin Min Atolush Ala Mechubar. One is not to tithe from using detached fruits to exempt fruits that are still growing, that are mechuber, that are still attached. In Torah, main truma, so truma. And if he does thusly, the truma, the tithe, is ineffective. And the practical outcome of that is, number one, that which he set aside as the tithe is untithed itself. And the stuff that's growing, when it eventually becomes detached, will need to be tithed again. The Gemara continues with a question. Notice we have a long question marking. Balmine Rav Asi Rav Yochanan. Rav Asi asks, Omar, a man says as follows, Perus aruga zu tulushim. Aruga is a row of fruits, or vegetation. Perus aruga zu tulushim, you truma, al perus aruga zu mechuborim. Or he says, Perus aruga zu mechuborim, you truma, al perus aruga zu tulushim. Or he declares a row of attached produce to serve as the tithe for produce that has already been detached. And he adds, L'chashiyit l'shu, that all references in the tithing to things that are attached, he says, when that which is right now attached becomes detached. V'nit l'shu, and then they became detached. Mahu, does the tithe that he declared work, serve as a tithe retroactively, or do we view it as trying to accomplish something concerning that which is a dover shelo balolam, something which hasn't happened yet? We saw in the Mishnah a reference to dover shelo balolam in the cases of a man trying to propose marriage to a woman after she converts. We said that the marriage doesn't take hold because her conversion hadn't taken place yet, as one of the examples. Omar Le, Rabbi Yochanan answers, Kol shebiyodo, anything that, though it's not around yet, the situation hasn't materialized yet, however, it's in his control to make it happen, lav kemechusar maisedomi, it's not considered as if something is lacking. Mechusar means something missing, maisa, an action. It's not viewed as if there's a missing action. In other words, in our case just now with the fruits, though he was declaring detached fruits to be the tithe on attached fruits, since he can physically detach them right now, they're viewed as if they're detached. They're not lacking the action of detaching. A question is now raised. Notice it's a long question, and following the long question, take note of the answer that also spans a few lines. Esvei ha'oimer li'isha hareat mukadeshes li lachar she'es gayer lachar she'et is gayri. Here we're quoting from our Mishnah a number of examples. What we've done marking wise is dashed, underlined the only point that's of concern to us right now. So we continue reading. We've already explained, we've already translated the Mishnah, but the focus is going to be on that which is dashed, underlined. So the man proposed marriage to a woman, and he said, I want to be married to you, and he gives her money, and he says, when I convert, after I convert. And other examples, lachar shetiz gairi, lachar shesh tachrir, lachar shetish tachrir, lachar shiyomus balech, lachar shetomus achosech, lachar shiyachlotz lech yivmech. In all of these cases, eina mekudeshes. There is no marriage. So bishlamo kulhu, I can understand almost all of the cases, because lav biyodo, they're not in his control. If a man says, I want to be married unto you, after you become freed as a bondmaid. So he can't free her. The owner of that woman has to free her. Or after your husband dies. He can't do anything about the husband who's currently alive. He has to wait till the angel of death takes away his soul. It's not in his hands to do anything about it. So all of those cases resulting in Eina Mekudeshes, that the marriage doesn't take place, it's reasonable. Eloger, Havi Biyodo, but the case of be married unto me after I convert, it's his decision to convert. It's in his power. Following Rabbi Yochanan's ruling above, that said, kol shebiyado, that which we dashed, underlined above, before the source, that which is in your power, is considered that nothing is lacking, and it's not considered davar shelo baliolam, it's not considered something that hasn't come to be yet, because you have control over it. So why is there no marriage? The Gemara answers, on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan, ger nami lav biyodo. In fact, conversion and all the necessary elements are not in your full control. The Omer of Chiyobarabo, Omer of Yochanan. Appropriately enough, Rabbi Yochanan is quoted. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ger tzorech l'shlosha. Conversion requires the presence of three Jews that serve as a based in, serve as a court, maitaima, and why is that? Mishpat ksiv bei kedin. The word mishpat appears in the context of conversion. Rashi quotes the pasuk mishpat echad yeh lochem kager ko ezrach. So since the word mishpat appears, which means justice, judgment, courts, kedin means three people to sit as a court. Miyemar de mizdakekule hanifosu. Who says that when he decides to convert, he's going to find three people? It's not in his control to sit down three people, or to create three people. It's an outside force, the gathering of the three people. And hence, even the case of his offer of marriage after I convert is not considered biyado. And that's why the Mishnah ruled Eino Mikudeshes. And hence, no question on Rabbi Yochanan. Maskif lo Rabbi Abba bar Momol Elo Me'ato. Well, according to what you just said, Hanoisein pruto l'shivchoso. A man gives a coin to his bondmaid. The Omar, and he says to her, Hareat mekudeshes li la'achar she'esh tachrirech. Behold, you are married unto me after I free you. Hachi nami dahavu kedushin. Should we say that in that case she is married? After all, it's in his power to set her free. So would this work? And the Gemara, you can see, is working with the assumption that it certainly does not work. But according to the logic that Rabbi Yochanan was using, something that's in your power is considered that it's already a given and it's done. This should work. The marriage should work. By the way, you'll notice the double underline that is featured on the side. It's a highlighting hadgoshas havu or lo havu kiddushin. As we mentioned earlier, these diamonds introduce questions that involve establishing whether or not whether there is a marriage that takes place or not. So the Gemara answers, Hachi hashta. How can you compare the case of the offering of money to the Shifcha to Rabbi Yochanan's ruling above regarding the tithing? Hasam meikora behemo hashto das achiris. Initially, she's a heathen bondmaid, and as such, she's under the control of the owner, like an animal is under the control of its owner. Now that she's been freed, she's a totally independent entity. And that transition, going from, we'll say, legal status like a behemoth to an independent, free Jewish individual, you can't imagine a greater lacking, a greater transition than that. And as such, it's not like the case that Rabbi Yochanan was describing in the context of tithing. Rashi's expression regarding this is on the first narrow line, Hilkuch ein mechuser maisa godol mizeh. There isn't any greater action of lacking or lacking of action than this. We continue in the Gemara. V'eloha di'omar of Hoshaya. Hanoisein pruto li'ishto v'yomar lo. Man gives a coin to his own wife and says to her, Hareya mekudeshes li la'achar she'egar sheikh. Eino mekudeshes. He rules that a man who gives his wife a coin and says, behold, you are married, you are to be married unto me after I divorce you. And Rav Hashaya says she's not married. In other words, when the husband divorces his wife, that's it. She's not going to be remarried to him because of what he's doing now. So, Hachinami to Rabbi Yochanan, Dabu Kiddushin. According to Rabbi Yochanan, are you going to say that it is Kiddushin? And here you don't have the issue of a transition from a behemoth to a free person. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, when things are in your control, you're giving her the money, you're going to divorce her, and then you're going to you're suggesting that she's going to be remarried to you because of the money you're giving her now. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, should that marriage in fact take place? That the post-divorce remarriage take place? The Gemara says no. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, that will not happen. Nihi de biyado legasha. Granted, it's in his power to divorce her. Biyado legasha. Is it in his power to remarry her? No. She has to agree to it. It's not. He's not in control of her once she's independent. And therefore, it's not a case of something in your control, and therefore, even Rabbi Yochanan concedes that it's not a marriage. It goes back into the realm of Dover Shelo Boliolam, something that hasn't materialized, and therefore there's no marriage. Tifshot de Boy Rav Hoshaya. Now, with this information, let's go and conclude, resolve another question, another issue raised by Rav Hoshaya. What's the issue raised by Rav Hoshaya? So he raises a question, and then using the information we just had, we're going to say, let's resolve his issue. Hanoising shtei prutos lisha. Man goes to an unmarried woman, and he gives her two coins, two prutos. Ba'achas omar lo, with one of them he says, hiskachi li hayom, be married unto me today. Uba'achas omar lo, and with the second coin he says, hiskachi li la'achar shagar sheikh, be married to me after I divorce you. Tifshot mina delo havu kiddushin. Let us conclude that even though she accepts marriage vis-a-vis the first coin, there won't be an automatic remarriage because of his giving her the second coin. Why not? Because of what we said just before, that the line before the most recent diamond, we saw Nihid Biyodo Lagasha, Biyodo Lagasha. Once she's divorced, is it in his control to remarry her? So too over here, the second stage marriage, even if she agrees to the initial marriage to be married today, that doesn't mean that she'll be automatically remarried because she accepts the second coin. The Gemara says, no, you can't conclude Rav Hoshaya's question regarding the two-coin question. You can't conclude his question based on that which was said just before. This is different. In the case before, the man was talking to his wife. She was currently married. He wasn't making any efforts right now to establish a marriage. His efforts were only to establish a marriage after the divorce, a future marriage, if you will. However, here it's different. Dilma ki hechi de tafsi kedushin ashto tafsi nami lachar kein. It could be that here, since right now a marriage is forming, when she accepts the first coin to be married to him today, that's the creation of a marriage. So by the power of a marriage being created today, we say since a marriage is being established now, there will piggyback along this marriage, the second stage marriage. So that we look at Rashi. Let's look at Rashi together. More or less across from here, a couple lines up. Dilmo kiechi de tafsi v'chule klomar. L'hachi misafkele Rav Hoshaya b'ho. This is the reason Rav Hoshaya has as his issue, as his doubts concerning this case. Mishum de'iko le'meimar. Because in this case, in the two-coin situation, there's room to say, dilmo sviralon. Maybe we hold Migu de'i boy l'kedushi hashto mekachi tafsibal kiddushin la'achar zman. Since right now, if he wants to marry her, he can marry her. Of course, if she accepts. So, along with the marriage that's forming now, there takes hold the marriage of later. And tafsibo kiddushin la'achar zman mehashta. From right now, that second stage marriage actually takes hold. Avol hamekadish is ishta, one who's marrying his wife. He's not establishing a marriage right now. That's already an established fact. Lo chazya hashta lemitvas kiddushi sharei mikudeshes v'medes. She's not fit to have kiddushin take hold later on. After all, she's married already. We turn back to the Gemara. Tanya kavose d'Rav Yochanan. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yochanan that says that anything that's in your control is not considered as if anything is lacking, and it's considered a done deal. And once again, we have a source dealing with tithing. It says, "Ein tormin min atolu shal amechubar." One is not to tithe from detached fruits to exempt that which is still growing. Vim toram, and if one does that, ein trumoso truma. It's ineffective. Ketzad. What's an illustration of this? Omar, the man, says, Peros aruga zu tlushim, you truma al peros aruga zu mechuberes. Or, peros aruga zu mechuberes, you truma al peros aruga zu tlushim lo omar klum. Okay, all of this we've seen before. Aval Omar, if he adds, and here we dashed underline the key phrase, lichish yitlishu, if he says that I want this row of fruits that's currently attached to serve as truma for a row that's detached, when the currently attached row becomes detached, and then it becomes detached, dvorav kayomin, his words, his tithing is effective. Yeser al kein omer belozer ben Yaakov. Here we have a new opinion. He goes further, hence the word yeser appears. Before we continue in the source, let's quickly glance at the side, no say, the topic heading, Shitas Rabozer ben Yaakov, Devshir la'afrish me'aruga zu, al'aruga zu, shelo hevio shlish. You can tithe from one row to exempt another row of produce that hasn't developed even a third. Tikosover odomaktishu makne dover shelo balon, because his opinion is, you can sanctify, you can transact things that have not come to be yet. So we continue in the source. Yeso akein omra belozer ben Yaakov, afilu omar, even if a person says peros arugazu tlushin, you truma al peros arugazu mechuberes, peros arugazu mechuberes, you truma al peros arugazu tlushin, lichishi yaviu shlish v'yitlishu. And he makes his declaration for the one row to be the tithe for the other row when they develop a third. They haven't developed a third yet even. And he says so that it should be a tithe when they develop a third and then become detached. And then what happens is ve'viyu shlish v'nitlishu. And then if they do develop a third and become detached, Dvorav Kayomin, his declaration is effective. The Rashi on Rebbe Elozer ben Yaakov, just a couple lines up from here, Yeser Akein, Afilu Mashe Ein Biyodo. And that is, I'll say, a major factor in Rebbe Elozer ben Yaakov as his departure from the Tanakhama. He says, even things that are not in your control, you can't make something that hasn't developed a third develop a third. That's through the natural growth process. It's not in your hands to mature a plant. So it works anyway. This declaration, this type of tithing works because he holds the kosover odom makdishu makne dovor shelo bo liolam. A person has the power to sanctify and transact We say has the power means it's legally recognized his sanctification or transaction of a Dovr Shalom, something that hasn't come to be yet. Rashi continues, L'chishiyaviu shlish, his declaration was, let the attached row, let the detached fruits be the tithe for the attached fruits. Once again, let the detached fruits be a tithe for the attached fruits when they develop a third. Rashi says, "Shlish shadayin lo yavishis." When he's speaking, they haven't developed a third yet. V'ein biyado liklosh ulahafrish, and it's not in his power to. It's not in his legal power. He can physically do this, but he can't. It's not legally recognized for him to detach and declare a hafrosha, a tithing right now. The tvush lo yavishis lav tvui. Grains that haven't developed a third are not considered grains. Kidigomer Rosh Hashanah, Viasasis Atvua Lishlosh, Artikli Lishalosh, Elo Lishlish. From the Gezeres HaKosuv in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, we learn that only when grains develop a third are they recognized as grains, recognized legally as grains, and hence subject to tithing. Prior to that, it's nothing. We turn back to the Gemara. Omar Rabba. You notice immediately a Roman numeral number 1, and we have a marking that highlights Rabbi Lozer ben Yankiv's name. You can see that it's we're using a diamond with a colored in tip. This, of course, is to distinguish this from the diamonds that were used above. This is a new discussion. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, a structural note. Roman numerals 1 and 2 and the diamond are featured. They represent shnei lishonos, two versions. B'machlokas Rabba v'Rav Yosef, concerning a disagreement between Rabba and Rav Yosef, b'pirush divrei Rav Lozer Yankiv, in their respective attempts to explain Rav Lozer ben Yankiv. So we begin the Gemara. Omar Rabba, lo Omar Rav Lozer ben Yankiv ela b'shachas, ava b'agam loy. Rav Yosef Omar afilu b'agam. Now we don't know what shachas is. We don't know what agam is until we look at Rashi. So let's look at Rashi together. The Rabba says that Rav Lozer ben Yankiv was willing to, we'll say, accept a declaration of tithing concerning grains that did not yet develop a third. And his declaration will be effective after they develop a third. But right now that you have a man looking at, while making his tithe statement, grains that haven't developed a third yet. Well, have they developed at all? So Rabba says that Rabbi Lozer ben Yankiv's, we'll say, his lenient ruling is accepted, it provided there is a level of development called shachas. And Rashi says, "Ela b'shachas shapa pi shelo nizbashu aganim shlish," even though the grains haven't developed a third, "wafilu adayin lo livlevu ha'chitim." Shachas miohave, even if the wheat kernels haven't blossomed yet, nevertheless there's a level of growth of that grain stalk that's called shachas. And v'roi litzor ha'chibema, when it reaches that level, it was a known level of plant development before the grains. Of the grain stalk actually blossom forth. Nevertheless, there's a sprout that is emerging above the ground, and at that point it already has agricultural significance. As Rashi says, it's fit to be harvested and used as animal feed. Demidi demintar v'choshevu. Rashi, every word of Rashi must be taken seriously. This is something that's minkar, that's recognizable, and choshev. It has significance, and a sufficient significance, i.e., it can serve as animal feed, and that enables his declaration to have meaning. Now, Rav Yosef went further. Rabbo said that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's lenient ruling is provided the grain spoken of right now has reached the shachas level of development. But agam not. Rashi says, avo ba'agam, she'eno elo tzmochim rakim. This is a description of very soft, very delicate initial sprouts. L'kam forish ma'ilosh and agam. Later the Gemara will mention what the word agam indicates. But it's the reference to tzmochim rakim, a very delicate sprouts, it's sprouting forth, it's too early in its development as far as Rabba is concerned, even within the lenient ruling of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rav Yosef, though, went even further, and he said, even if the plants that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was describing, where you're making your tithe declaration prior to reaching a third, all the plant has reached right now is agam, the tithe declaration takes hold. The Gemara continues. My mashma dahai agam lishna debutsalno hu. From where do we know that agam is something that's merely sprouting forth? It's a delicate, fresh plant. Where does the word agam appear in that context, or how can I learn that the word agam describes that? Omar Abelozer, the Omar Kro, there's a pasuk that says halachuf keagmoin roshoi. Lachuf is to bend over. So the pasuk is describing the bending of one's head like the agmon, showing you the word agam is something that's very pliable. It's soft, and in the case of plants, it's something that's very, very early in its development, whereby the sprout, the plant, is still pliable enough that you can bend it over. Once it reaches a more advanced level of development, if you try to do that to the grain stalk, it'll simply crack. It's not pliable anymore. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking. And maybe before we go on, let's just reiterate the point of controversy between Rabba and Rav Yosef within Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabba required a certain level of chashivus, of importance. Agam, according to Rabba, did not meet that standard. And Rashi says this. If you notice the Rashi, basically, across from where we are now in the Gemara, Rashi says, loy. Dekevon de lo chashiv. Notice, here we use the word lo chashiv. In contrast to that which we squiggle lined before chashuv, here we squiggle line lo chashuv. It's not chashuv, therefore lo chayel alei shem trum lamafer. Therefore, there isn't enough sticking power for the truma designation to take hold retroactively. Rav Yosef said that doesn't matter, even if it's very insignificant. Your Truma declaration, according to the Tana, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, will nevertheless be effective. And when the grains develop a third and you decide to harvest in them, they will have already been tithed. We continue in the Gemara by noticing the trapezoid or volcano shape. On the side of the Gemara, we're going to try to explain what the Gemara is going to be doing in the next number of lines, almost till the bottom of the page. The trapezoid highlights the expression keman azla, which means like whom does this go? HaGemara mikasheres bein dino shurbazim yankiv. The Gemara will try to connect the ruling of Rebazim yankiv makdish dober shelo bal yolam, which concerns the sanctification, or the, in this case, the tithing of something that hasn't come to be yet. After all, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov was describing a declaration concerning grains that haven't developed a third yet, and we saw how little they might in fact be, and yet it's an effective tithe. And we want to connect that Im dinoi shel Rabbi Chanina. Notice a double underline will be used to highlight that name. What is the din of Rabbi Chanina? She'efshe likadesh ubar nekeva. That it's possible to establish a marriage between a man and an as yet unborn female. V'alzeh yesh levarer ayin bo'inon hukar ubra. So regarding this, we have to analyze, is there a, for the marriage to take hold, which Rabbi Chanina says a person can in fact marry an unborn female. In order for the marriage to take hold, do we require the pregnancy to be recognizable? Now we indicated that there are two lishonos in the Gemara. Lasha number one, according to the first version, Rabba will tell you Davka Hukar. Rabba says it would have to be that the pregnancy is recognizable. This is similar in a sense to what Rabba said concerning the grains. They had to reach the shachas level of development for his verbal tithing to have legal staying power. Rav Yosef, afilu below hukar, even if the pregnancy is not yet recognizable, the marriage that Rabbi Chanina accepts will take hold. That's as far as the first Lashon. Lashon number two, you will see that L'kulei Alma Davka Kishuka Ubar, according to all, meaning not just Rabba but Rav Yosef also, for the marriage to take hold with that as yet unborn female, the pregnancy though would have to be recognizable. A triangle marking will appear later, and that's Havlotas, the word Shachas. We're going to be highlighting the word Shachas in Lashon number 2, Laharois Sherabo v'gam Rav Yosef Amri Divrehem B'Shachas, that both Rabbi and Rav Yosef say their point of view with regard to Shachas and not something of an earlier development level. Now the Gemara. We said Keman Azla is highlighting the expression Keman Azla, meaning like whom does the following go. Just note that this, when we ask like whom does he go, it's a reference to Rabbi Chanina. It's a question that's focused on Rabbi Chanina, who appears two lines from now. The long question begins Keman Azla ha desanya. We have a source that says Omer lechaveiro im yolda ishtecha nekeva mekudeshes li. Man says, if your wife gives birth to a little girl, I want her to be married to me. Lo amar klum. It's meaningless. V'yomar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina says that this idea of lo amar klum is lo shonu elo shein ishto muberes. That's when the friend's wife is not yet pregnant. Aval ishto muberes dvarv kayomen. If she is pregnant, then the marriage takes hold. This marriage offer will take hold. Keman. Well, like whom does Rabbi Chanina go? Rabbi Chanina makes reference to the marriage will take hold if the woman spoken of, the mother, is currently pregnant with that nikeva. So the Gemara answers, I kerabo, if Rabbi Chanina's were to make sense of Rabbi Chanina, well, according to Rabba, kishuhu ke'ubra, Rabbi Chanina would be acceptable marriage. If you're going to analyze according to Rabba, it would have to be kishuhu ke'ubra. Now, where did Rabba appear? Rabba appeared earlier, but nothing to do with laws of marriage. Nothing to do with unborn children. Rabba appeared earlier in the law concerning tithing. And Rabba said that even though something hasn't yet come to be, if it's almost there, meaning shachas in the case of the tithing, it's on its way to reaching a third, so then the tithing is effective. Here, regarding the woman who's pregnant, Rab will say, well, if the pregnancy is recognizable, hukar ubra, hukar means the ubar, the unborn, is recognizable, in other words, it's recognized that the mother, it's visible that she's pregnant, then that din of Rabbi Chanina will take hold, meaning the marriage offered will be a marriage. And Ikir of Yosef, if we analyze Rabbi Chanina in terms of Rav Yosef's standard, even if the pregnancy is not recognizable, as long as she's pregnant, that's enough for the marriage with the unborn and this man to take hold. If you recall, Rav Yosef said that the tithing has meaning even if it's just merely agam in its early stages of development. The parallel here, the pregnancy is in its early stages, i.e., it's not yet recognizable, but it still will take hold. The marriage will take hold. The Ika Diamri, Oma Rabba. Another version is Rabba commenting on Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov above. In the case of the tithing, Lo Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov Elo B'Shachas Debei Kivsha. Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov allowed a tithe to be made of grains that haven't developed even a third, provided it was Shachas. It reached the level of the melt we called Shachas, that we described that before, something that people would harvest and serve and give their animals as animal feed. If it's Shachas Debei Kivsha, that means shachas growing in a rain-watered field. That's a kind of field that doesn't depend on human intervention for supplying sufficient water. It's called a beis habal in other terms, or in Hebrew. Bei kivsha is beis habal. It's watered by rain. So that it's a kind of growth that doesn't rely on additional human efforts. So in such a case, Rav Elazar ben Yankov says that the declaration of tithe, even if it's at the mere shachas level, is effective. But aval b'shachas debei shakyo lo. But regarding grains developing in an irrigation field, where the owner, the farmer, the human being has to intervene and supply the sufficient necessary water, there, even Rav Elazar ben Yankov will not recognize the declaration of tithe to be effective. Rashi, toward the end of the narrow lines, Aval b'shachas de b'shakyo shel beis hashlochen. Beis hashlochen is an irrigation field. Shetzrichu lahashkois, that you have to water it. Lo Omar, Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov would not have said his ruling of leniency. Why? Davido de pseido kilo mashkilo kilo miboilo. It's very common for grains, for plants growing in fields like that to be a total loss if you don't water it as much as it needs. Hilkoch kemishalo bali olam klal. Who? Notice Rashi adds one little word, the word klal, but it makes all of the difference. That even according to Rav Elazar ben Yankov, that says Dover Shalol Bali Olam is not a factor to prevent something from working. However, if it's low Bali Olam Klalis, it hasn't arrived in the world at all. Not just that it's underdeveloped, but it hasn't arrived at all. That's already going too far as Rav Elazar ben Yankov is concerned, and the tithe will not be effective. We continue, Rav Yosef, we go back to the Gemara, Rav Yosef, Omar, Afilu B'Shachas Debei Shakyo. Rav Yosef is consistent in his position of leniency here, and says that a declaration of tithing concerning grains growing in an irrigation field, as long as it's reached a Shachas level of development, even though it's an irrigation field, and its outcome isn't so certain, it nevertheless is considered a good tithe, a binding tithe. So we see Rabbo and Rav Yosef once again in Loshen number 2, explaining Rav Lozer ben Yankiv, who was lenient in his allowing tithing to take hold, even though you were dealing with a certain level of Dover Shelo Bal Yolam, something that hasn't really come to be yet. The grains have not developed a third, whereby we're talking about grains that aren't really obligated right now in being tithed, but nevertheless, the declaration having incorporated that it shall be a tithe when they develop a third and become detached, so it's effective, even though right now they physically haven't reached that level. We mentioned before, and we'll mention again, in version number 2, Roman numeral number 2, both Rabbo and Rav Yosef, we'll say, limit Rav Elozer ben Yankiv's leniency to shachas, but not less than that. Bearing that in mind, the question is raised. Keman azla ha desanya haomer lechavero im yolda ishtecha nekeva mekudeshes li. A man says to his friend, if your wife gives birth to a female, I want her to be married to me. From now, lo omar klum, it's a meaningless marriage offer. V'yomar b'chanino lo shana lo she'en ishto muberes. We say that it's meaningless. That's only if you're dealing with the friend's wife as is in a state of non-pregnancy. Aval ishto muberes v'ov kayomen. If she happens to be pregnant, so then the marriage offer is effective. Come on. Well, like whom are we to understand Rabbi Chanina? Answer, Kishahukar Ubra, if the pregnancy is has reached a stage that the fetus is noticeable, that her pregnancy is noticeable, the Divrakol, then everyone, not just Rabbo, but Rav Yosef also, or I should say not just Rav Yosef, Rabbo as well, they both agree that the marriage will be effective. But what we have to emphasize at this stage is that, as opposed to in the first Loshon, Rav Yosef would not have required Hukar Ubra, because in the first Loshon by Roman numeral number 1, Rav Yosef was speaking about the tithing experiences taking hold even at the Agam insignificant early stage, not so over here in Roman numeral number 2, where Rav Yosef speaks about the necessity of the grains having reached the shachas stage in order for the tithing to be effective. And the parallel to the case of pregnancy is a case of hukar ubra. Omar Abaye. And actually, before we go further in the Gemara text, we glance at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading, which reads, Abaye mevi rishimish tanoim. Rabbi will present to us a list of tanoim, shesoivrim odamakne dovor shelo bol yolam, that a person can transact that which has not yet come to be. When we say transact, it might be a phrase or a term that has some, it might be somewhat limiting, but it means that a person can make legal declarations, whether it's a transaction or it's a matter of sanctification or it's a matter of tithing, all of them taking effect even though the subject hasn't come to be yet, hasn't arrived yet. Omar Abaye, Reb Elozer ben Yankiv, Verebi, Verebi Meir. Three names. Kulu Svilahu, all are of the opinion, all are in agreement. Odo Makne Dover Shelo Bo Le'olam. A person can transact something that hasn't come to be yet. In commercial terms, maybe they're referred to as futures. Number one, Reb Elozer ben Yankiv Hodamoran. Reb Elozer ben Yankiv was already stated, he was already presented above. We know him. He spoke about the ability to declare an effective truma, effective tithing concerning grains that haven't reached a level of development that they're obligated to be tithed. But since eventually they will reach that level, so even though right now it's low bali olam and hasn't come to reach the level of obligation, the tithing is nevertheless effective. Number two, Rebbe Desanya. Where do we see Rebbe acknowledging Odo Makne Dover Shelo Bali Olam? We continue at the top of Daf Samach Gimel. The Pasuk says, Lo Saskir Eved Al Adoinov. There's no need to translate that Pasuk, because it's important for us to see how Rebbe interprets that Pasuk. Rebbe Oimer. Rebbe says, that Pasuk is speaking about the following, Beloikech Eved, someone who purchases a slave, Almenas L'shacharo HaKosuv Medaber. A man purchases a slave with the intent to free him. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances? Omar Rav Nachmar Yitzchok Kagon Shekosav Lei. The person wrote the following. Le Chesheek Alchacha, when I buy you. Now right now he hasn't bought him. So you're dealing with what's called Dover Shelo Bali Olam, a situation that hasn't come to be yet. But he declares that when I buy you, Harei Atzmecha Konui Loch Me'achshav, then I want you to be owned by yourself. In other words, you're free. You own yourself. You will be free from right now. Rebbe says that that's binding. So you see that Rebbe can, according to Rebbe, a person can transact the slave's ownership to the slave himself, even though the transactor hasn't gained ownership of him yet. So it's an example of a futures of a Dover Shelo Bali Olam, and yet it's effective. Rebbe Meir Desanya. And here, number three, we have a Tanaic source, and Rebbe Meir, his name will appear further into the source. It says, and you'll notice that these are examples that we've already seen earlier today. He says, you are married unto me, lachar she'es gayer, lachar she'tis gayri, lachar she'es tachrer, lachar she'tis tachri, lachar she'yomus balich, lachar she'tomus achoseich, lachar she'yachlots loch yivmech, eino mekudeshes. She's not married. That ruling we saw already in our Mishnah. Because in all of these cases, there is no capability of establishing a marriage right now. It's only it's dependent purely on something of a future nature. And hence, the first opinion that Tanakama holds, it's not a marriage. Rebbe Meir Omer Mekudeshes. And Rebbe Meir, of course, is the name we were looking for. He says that it is. This kind of marriage is effective. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler Omar Omer Eino Mekudeshes. Rabbi Yudah Nossi Omer Mekudeshes. Uma Tam Omru, why would they have said in the case of Yomus Baalech or Achoseich Eino Mekudeshes? Why, according to Rabbi Yudah Nossi, all of these cases are effective marriages. In other words, the fact that you're dealing with the Dover Shelo Bali Olam does not thwart the marriage from taking hold. Why then in the case of why specifically in the case of Lachar Shiyomus Baleich and Lachar Shetomus Achasech do we say it doesn't take hold? Mishum Eva, to recognize such a marriage would create a sense of strain, Eva, ill will. You can imagine a man says to a married woman, I want you to be married to me after your husband dies. Well, what kind of sense of fraternity would there be when you have a man anticipating the other guy's death? Rashi, four lines from the top, says Mishum Eva, Evas Achosa. Likewise, the strain with regard to her sister, Eva's Baila, the strain regarding her husband, Va Sha'ora, Rabbi Meir Svirole. Regarding the others, Rabbi Yudah Nossi holds, like Rabbi Meir, that the marriage takes hold. But regarding regarding the marriage stated, I will marry you after your sister dies. So that would create a sense of Eva between them, and likewise after your husband dies. The Gemara. Gemara asks, V'nachshav nami Rabbi Yudah Hanasi, in the list of names that Abaye presented as those holding Dover Shelo Boli Olam can be nevertheless transacted, why don't you include Rabbi Yudah Hanasi? So the Gemara answers, Hainu Rebbe, Hainu Rabbi Yudah Hanasi. Rebbe was mentioned already, and Rebbe and Rabbi Yudah Hanasi are one and the same. So there's no need to repeat Rabbi Yudah Hanasi when Abaye already acknowledged Rebbe as being one that holds Odo Maknev Sholom, as we saw in the top line. Question, V'nachshav Nami Rebbe Akiva Desanya. Here's a new name, a new source. Why don't you consider Rebbe Akiva in the list? What is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and in what context did he say what he said that would lead the Gemara to suggest Rabbi Akiva as being part of the list of Odo Matna Dover Shelo Boli Olam? Desanya, Koinam Shani Oiso Lepicha. A woman, a married woman, says that she is declaring forbidden. Konam is an expression like korban. Korban is a sacrifice. It's as if she's sanctifying her work production. Shani osa lepicha, that you, my husband, shall not be able to benefit from my work production. Now, it's a well known fact that a married woman, part of the, let's say, marital bond or obligations that the couple has one unto the other, is that a woman's income belongs to her husband. That, of course, is dealt with extensively in Maseches Ksubos. So a woman has no right to prohibit her husband from benefiting from that which she is obligated to provide him. And therefore, the first opinion says, Ein tzorach lahafir, there's no need for the husband to absolve this vow. It's a non-starter. Lahafir is a reference to the husband's need to void those vows that his wife makes that he does not want. But here, there's no vow in the first place because she's obligated to provide him, so she doesn't have any power to through a vow to overrule that which she's obligated in. Now, Rabbi Akiva Oimer Yofer, Rabbi Akiva says it's a good idea for this husband to absolve this vow. Shemo tadif olav yeser min oroilo. She might produce more than she's legally obligated to produce for her husband. The Mishnah in Maseches Ksubos delineates the amounts that we speak of when we talk about a woman having to produce income and share it with her husband. That is true, but up to a certain point. If she has a very large income, she is produces much more than the rabbis detailed, then that doesn't belong to her husband. That she can always keep. Of course, in a normal situation, even when she produces more, the husband will enjoy that, will partake of that as well. However, if she vows to prohibit her husband from benefiting from her income, Rabbi Akiva says, it's worth your while to absolve her of that vow, because by not doing so, future additional income, future excess income, will be off limits to you. So what do you see? What's the point? The point is that the woman has control over Dovar Shelo Boli Olam. We're talking about income that hasn't been realized yet. It's just a question of a future realization. And yet, she can prohibit it right now. that's a form of Odo Makne Dovor Shelo Boli Olam. So why isn't Rabbi Akiva part of the list of names that Abaye presented? The Gemara answers, because when looking at Shitas Rabbi Akiva, there is a qualification given by the Amoroyim. Ho itmar alo omar Rav Huna brei de Rav Yoshua. Rav Huna explains Rabbi Akiva acknowledging her power to make the vow is only be'oimeris, where she says yikatshu yodai le'osehem. I sanctify my hands to the one that created them, to the Creator. What is she sanctifying? Is she sanctifying the cash income per se? No. She's sanctifying her hands. Ah, v'yodayim isnu ba'olam. Her hands are right now here. So that Rabbi Akiva does not represent someone. If, of course, if we accept Rav Huna Brev Yeshua's interpretation, he doesn't represent an opinion of Odo Makdish Dover Shalom Balom. She's being Makdish her arms, her hands, with regard to their income. That's as far as why Rabbi Akiva is not included in the list. What's interesting to note, though, is that with regard to the basic income level, there, her sanctification of her hands doesn't take any effect, because she has a prior obligation to produce that for her husband. All Rabbi Akiva was concerned with was that which would be above and beyond. But even that, we just said, the woman is not sanctifying the cash that hasn't been earned yet. She's sanctifying her hands with respect to what they produce. But the hands themselves are here right now. So it's not an example of Dover Shelo Boli Olam. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.